It seems a long time since we last heard anything encouraging about mineral discoveries. This week I came across an important piece of news, which in my opinion casts a bright ray on the horizon. In an area 240 kilometres southwest of Kalgoorlie lies the outcome of a massive exploration program which already has proved up two commercial nickel ore bodies, which, when combined, are larger than Poseidon's Windara nickel mine. Continuing exploration has proved the existence of several additional nickel ore bodies, and these are currently undergoing detailed diamond drilling to prove that these also are commercial. All this activity is taking place at Forestegna, in an area exceeding 100 kilometres in length and comprising three separate belts of ultrabasics, giving a potential strike length of over 250 kilometres. It's known that AMAX, an American company, is the major partner and overall manager for the area. They are joined on specific projects within the known belt of ultrabasic with various Australian companies, including Endeavour Oil and Geometals No Liability. Well, with me I have Mr. Ron Manners of Kalgoorlie, who's been associated with prospecting activity in the Forestania area since 1969. Well, perhaps, Ron, we can expect Forestania to develop into a major nickel-producing field in the foreseeable future in view of this information.
Well, Stan, I'd say that's fairly safe to say, even when you take into account the other problems that we know of, like government policies and inflation that have almost killed some of the other new projects. I think that the Forestania project will get off the ground. It's got a few things going for it that the others didn't have. The points in favour as being the good geographical location. It's down in a farming area, so they have themselves an area which is quite attractive for people to live, and they can draw on existing population that surrounds the area, and this probably will prevent them from having to overcapitalise a new project by having to build their own town. I think the people will already be there in the area, so that's going to make it easier there. I think another thing in their favour is that they don't have the metallurgical problem with their ore, or this is on present indications, which I understand will allow them to get a concentrate of some 16 to 17%, which is certainly makes it much easier for them to kick off initially. And I think the other thing that's very much a plus in their favour is that AMAX themselves will probably create their own market. They'll buy their own concentrate and ship it straight off, presumably through Esperance, to AMAX's own nickel smelter, which they have in Louisiana, USA.
Do you think you can add a few more comments about the already established oil bodies? Any specifications and details that you may have?
These are no longer classified secrets because they have been released by the companies involved. I think it's safe to say that the two oil bodies at the south end, that's Digger Rocks and Cosmic Boy, combined with their tonnage of nickel in excess of what's been established at Windara, are sufficient to establish a viable mining operation as is. Now that's great, and that's the way it will go ahead. The encouraging thing is that once that infrastructure for a nickel concentrator and the extraction of it has been established there, the newer ore bodies that they're currently drilling up will just simply be able to be fed into an existing situation, so that even though they may find further smaller ore bodies, they may be larger, but even if they're smaller, they will still be economically viable, being able to come in on the back of the existing setup that they'll have at Forestania.
In order to prove this area, there must have been a considerable amount of drilling. Perhaps you could tell us that.
I was at a diamond drilling symposium in Perth last week, and some interesting figures were announced there that give you some appreciation of the amount of drilling that goes into finding one ore body. For instance, on the Cosmic Boy ore body, they put in 97 diamond drill holes to block that ore body out. And so they're certainly convinced that it's a very continuous ore body right through. Another one of the figures that were announced at the seminar was that on the Forestania area being operated by AMAX, they've now completed 90 kilometres of diamond drilling. That's
90 kilometres. That sounds a length, isn't it?
It sounds like
some distance.
It sounds as though they've made a mistake on the calculation, but it is 90 kilometres, and that's
what's that in feet?
It's it's about 300,000 feet of diamond drilling, and that's a powerful lot of diamond drilling. They've been working on that area, diamond drilling the area, since about 1972, and their work's been continuous, and it shows no sign of stopping in the foreseeable future. They've got their drill targets mapped out in front of them for many, many months to come.
What type of mining operation will result?
Well, this, of course, is AMAX's decision, but I would think that the Digger Rocks deposit would most certainly be an open-cut operation. They've got fairly high-grade nickel, and it's very close toward the surface, so that would be an immediate open-cut proposition. A little north of their cosmic buoy, I would imagine a deep vertical shaft would be sunk in conjunction with the open pit and at the Digger Rocks, and both the nickel ore from both of those would feed to a joint concentrator. The other ore body's been proven up now. Well, it's really too soon to say that what type of mining operation or the mining methods that they'll use to mine these.
In other words, Ron, indications are that this is a major discovery.
Well, certainly of great significance to this area, and if we could relate it to the effect on Kalgoorlie, which is something that affects all of us, I'd say there's likely to be a great effect in Kalgoorlie from this development, because it appears that AMAX's policy generally is to use contractors wherever possible rather than to try and do everything themselves as a company. If they're going to use contractors for supply and materials and other work done, they will hopefully turn to Kalgoorlie as a supply centre, and this will be good. At a time when, as you say, most of the news has been bad lately, well, this is a ray of light, and the effect on Kalgoorlie just has got to be nothing but good.
When do you see the project as a whole swinging into operation and production?
Well, I can only guess on this, Sam, but I would think that there would be an announcement made probably before the end of this calendar year, and I'd expect then for them to move into action early in the new year, because they've certainly done all their homework on it. All the feasibility studies have been done, and now it should be just a matter of full speed ahead, subject to the various government departments giving their blessing to the proposal.
Let's hope they do. Thank you very much, Ron Manners.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of Goldfields Magazine. And being Kalgoorlie Cup Day, Milton Kernduff will be joining us with his preview on today's races later in the programme. This is Stanley Brown reporting. According to a press release this week, the latest Goldfields glamour metal is platinum, located on the Yellowdyne Platinum Prospect, 28 kilometres southeast of Southern Cross, which is held by Kalgoorlie-based private explorer Mankow Mining Proprietary Limited. With me is the managing director, Ron Manners. Ron Manners, when and how was this discovery first brought to your attention?
Well, Stanley, in about early 1980, I think it was, a local geologist, Miss Sue Smith, who'd been aware of the platinum potential of the Yellowdyne area for some time, brought it to my attention, and we had a look at the area. She had some theories of the similarities between that area and other platinum-producing areas in the world. But strangely enough, it's about 3.5 years ago. We've had many companies look at the area, and until the Union Corporation people from the South African company actually looked at the area and saw some similarities, I think nobody had managed to make any sense of the rocks and seen the potential.
Why do you refer to it as the Goldfields glamour metal?
It's a metal that, as industrial activity picks up again, it will soar up above the price of gold, as it did in early 81, it went over $1,000 an ounce. And then when the recession throughout the world came, it dropped down to $240, which was below the cost of production. Now the industrial activity's building up, and it's got so many and so many varied uses that that it just has tremendous potential to go over the $1,000 an ounce very quickly.
Well, what rating do you give platinum in its importance to the world's mineral needs?
Well, I guess its usefulness is that it plays a part in everyone's daily life, whereas gold is more or less a monetary metal. This one, platinum, is used in the catalytic process for the production of most of the major fertilizers in the world, and it's used as a catalyst in the refinement of all the petroleum products, right down to its major use in jewellery, particularly in Japan. It's a very, very high fashion material for jewellery in Japan, or in especially in countries where the people have tanned skin, where the white gold, as they call it, is more complementary to the coloured skin than perhaps gold.
Mm. Are there any other known reserves of platinum on the goldfields, or is this the first discovery?
Well, it seems to be emerging as the first serious prospect that's been recognised as such by a major company. There have been traces of it, and there are some platinum produced as a byproduct from Western Mining's nickel at Kambalda. It's a byproduct when they refine it at Kwinana, I believe. But it's only a trace element. It's not found in any great quantity.
What quantity is contained in this area of which we're speaking?
Well, we don't know yet. I understand that the company has a diamond drill organised to be on site in about 10 to 15 days.
And that is going to be a joint venture with the General Mining Union Corporation, that's GenCore. And how much will be spent in proving up the potential of the area?
Well, the Union Corporation have got the terms of the joint venture is that they, by spending $510,000, they can earn a 51% equity in it. And then the joint venture is actually between the Union Corporation Australian subsidiary and our private company, Mancal Mining Proprietary Limited, and another Australian, small Australian listed company called Anglo Gold Mines Limited.
From your experience with all your dealings in mining operations, do you rank this discovery as being of importance to the Goldfields region, and are you optimistic that you will find a mine of platinum there?
No, it's certainly too soon to be optimistic to that point of talking any scale of mining operations, but I'm certainly optimistic in the comments that have been made to me and the similarities with the South African platinum fields.
It has been reported certain the values that have been found there. Can you comment about those?
Yes, these are from earlier exploration work, not by companies who were looking for platinum, but companies who were looking for nickel in the early 1970s. And the assays, I understand, that they obtained were in the order of 7 ounces per tonne, which is a brilliant result. And if we can simply duplicate that now, that platinum is a glamour metal. I guess we must remember back in early 1970, platinum wasn't on anyone's list as a metal to be looking for. It was simply nickel. And if they couldn't find nickel, it didn't matter whatever else they found, it was of very little interest to them.
Do you see this triggering off further exploration for platinum?
Oh yes, I think most of the areas around us down there have been pegged by other companies. So people have been aware of what's happening down there for some weeks now, and I think most of the major ground that's not held by ourselves is covered by other companies around the area there.
Is there going to be a progress report issued by the joint venture companies?
Oh yes, I would expect something within the next 4 to 6 weeks. It'll be a joint announcement between Anglo Gold Mines Limited, the listed company in Australia, and Union Corporation. This will be made publicly through the stock exchange, I would think.
Ron Manners, thank you.
sure that everyone's paid before I give the news that the food will be late. The reason the food will be late is that the caterer's got another commitment at the race, of course, and it's a little late, but I'm told the food will be much better for the waiting, so we thought we'd just... I hope that goes for us too, but I thought I'd just say just a couple of quick words. Firstly, I'd like to welcome you all to the initial function of the Workers' Party Kalgoorlie branch, and mention that through the week someone said something to me that probably has been echoed by many of you, and they've said that what the Workers' Party stand for, the straight out free enterprise philosophy, is great. They have no argument with it, but they thought that it will find no application in this hard, cold, cruel world that we just happen to live in. They thought that we had our eyes fixed on some kind of utopia. And I think that's probably a fair comment. I think all political parties have their eyes fixed on a utopia. I know that the socialists have their eyes fixed on a utopia where they will live at your expense. But there is a basic difference between our utopia and theirs. Just last week, a local Labor Party member of Parliament that I have a great respect for defined socialism for me, and he used the little story of Paddy and Mick, the two Irishmen. And Paddy said to Mick, "Look, I can't believe that you're a socialist, because that would mean that if you have two horses, you would give me one." And Mick said, "Oh, yes, that's right, I would give you one of my horses if I had two horses." And Paddy said, "Well, Mick, this means that if you had two cows, you would give me one of your cows." "Oh, but indeed I would." "And it means that if you had two pigs, you would give me one of your pigs." He said, "Paddy, be buggered, you know that I have two pigs." So really, that is the fallacy of socialism, and that's what we're all about, endeavouring to put forward an alternative, and put it forward in simple terms so that we can undo some of the damage that's been done to us by the government-run education system and all the other monopolies that we seem to have problems with. One of the ways of defining the free enterprise system is that one of the differences is that it's the only system that we've seen put forward where there are no pawns on someone else's chessboard. It's another way of saying there are no victims at all. Everyone has an equal chance. It's a fair field with no favour to any particular group. And the alternative is an unfair field with special favours to some at the expense of others, which is another definition of socialism. So that's so much for the philosophy. And then the other thing is, well, all of us here tonight, it's fair to say that we have something in common, probably many things in common, but one thing that we have in common is that we're all of the individualist temperament. That is, that we like to make our own decisions about our own lives. We want to accept our own responsibilities. In other words, we are really our own people. The opposite, of course, is the bureaucratic temperament, and they enjoy controlling other people's lives. I think they derive a great deal of enjoyment from watching other people twitch. They derive enjoyment from stopping things from happening. And that's the sort of bureaucratic temperament that we're all up against, and this is what makes us a little mad, but that's the opposite side of it. So I think the people of an individualist temperament would find something of appeal in the straight, broad freedom philosophy that we're promoting. The reason that it hasn't been available, that we haven't been able to read much about it, is because we've really been dictated to by what we read, what we're taught in the schools with a set syllabuses. The Workers' Party has made a lot of this information available, and there's a book list over there with lists of books and cassettes and all the other stuff. There's a money back guarantee. If you think it's no good, bring it back and fix you up. If you think it's good, sell it to someone else at a profit. Yakimot, this is the way of this is the way of passing the message on. We hope that, and please don't think this is a brainwashing session, because we accept the fact that everyone's an individual, and if you accept 5% or 100% of what's in the Workers' Party platform or in the free enterprise literature that we pass out, we think that's great. If it's helped people to think and question the type of thing that's being fed to us, then we feel that we've been quite successful. Probably just to finish off, I might mention that this freedom philosophy has been around for many years, and in 1825, a fellow Frenchman called Frederick Bastiat wrote a book called The Law. It's available for $2. It's on the book list. And he's now making quite a name for himself 150 years after he wrote this, as a person who in 1825 saw that socialism would have tremendous appeal to people and it would become extremely popular throughout the world. But he also saw further into the distance to the time when logic would prevail and people would question the socialistic standards and there would be a swing back. And I think we see the swing back now in many countries. So just a quote from this book that was written 150 years ago. He defines socialism as legal plunder. He says, but how is legal plunder identified? Quite simply, see if the law takes from some persons what belongs to them and gives it to persons to whom it does not belong. See if the law benefits one citizen at the expense of another by doing what the citizen himself cannot do without committing a crime. Then abolish that law without delay, for it is not only an evil itself, but it's a fertile source for further evils because it invites reprisals. If such a law, which may be an isolated case, is not abolished immediately, it will spread, multiply, and develop into a system called socialism. Now, legal plunder can be committed in an infinite number of ways. Thus, we have an infinite number of plans for organizing it. Tariffs, protection, benefits, subsidies, progressive taxation, government control education systems, guaranteed jobs, guaranteed profits, minimum wages, a right to relief, a right to the tools of labor, free credit, and so on and so on. All these plans as a whole, with their common aim of legal plunder, constitute socialism. Now, since under this definition, socialism is a body of doctrine, what attack can be made against it other than a war of doctrine? If you find the socialistic doctrine to be false, absurd, and evil, then refute it. And the more false, the more absurd, and the more evil it is, the easier it will be to refute. Above all, if you wish to be strong, begin by rooting out every particle of socialism that may have crept into your legislation. This will be no light task. Well, that guy started a task 150 years ago, and we're very fortunate tonight in having with us a fellow that is continuing that fight, and very effectively. And I hope that you can ask any questions when Dr. Neil Scrimmager is finished his little talk, and I hope you make it tough. Hit him with all the hard questions, because you'll find that he's a very effective refuter of the socialist propaganda and a very effective spokesman for private enterprise. I give you Dr. Neil Scrimmager.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to read from a prepared speech, because unprepared, I'm quite capable of speaking for an hour and a half. And you're all going to be rather hungry in a little while, so I'll get going. I'm delighted to be up in Kalgoorlie. My first visit, I look upon the country people as dinkum, genuine, warm-hearted people. So let's hope you receive this warm-heartedly. Over the period of history, the human race has experienced feudal, then religious, and then now, bureaucratic and political oppression. It will not be the meek, nor the worms, nor the insects that inherit the earth. But at the present rate of foolishness of this society, the bureaucrats will indeed occupy that position. They will determine what sort of life you have, what sort of government you have, and what sort of deprivation of individual rights your children will have permanently. In the circumstances, the most dangerous person to this state of affairs is the person who learns to think. The thinker will inevitably come to the conclusion that the system he lives under and the government is intolerable, insane, and dishonest. It has taken a very short period of time for the more intelligent amongst us, including our so-called leaders in the ivory towers of the universities and in the media, to realize that the Whitlam Gang is the worst government Australia has ever had, and socialism the worst disease this country has ever experienced. Socialism, of course, has caused economic collapse and or paralysis in every country which has tried it, the degree of collapse being proportional to the degree of socialism inflicted on the hapless population. Free medical care, of course, has produced the same degree of collapse or paralysis of medical care in every country that has tried to introduce it. One's seeing this in Canada now. Despite arguments from Mr. Hayden and quietness from Mr. Hayden, it is quite clear that Canada cannot afford Medibank. It is a far richer country at present than Australia. The United Kingdom has suffered from socialism for about 60 years and is a pathetically ensanguinated example of that disease and its former greatness. As the Civic Affairs Bureau amply put it recently, what the Nazi bombs and terror couldn't accomplish, socialism has in wrecking a country. I sincerely believe that the only alternative to the mess this country finds itself in is not to return to laissez-faire capitalism, because we've never had it, but to turn to laissez-faire capitalism or free enterprise, where the individual and individual rights are the only concept worth supporting against government at both state, federal, and local government and their coercive activities towards the individual. All the supposed evils of capitalism and the free enterprise system have indeed been caused by government interference in that system, with subsidies, tariffs, controls, what have you. A free market does make all monopolies impossible. The only example in the world where there is a monopoly is in the diamond cartel, but that could be broken. In contrast, all government monopolies entail an impossibility of composition, of competition, and you should note, and you probably realize, their widespread inefficiency and cost. The ultimate regulator, of course, in the free market is the movement of capital and money to where efficiency is at its highest. The free market is certainly ruled by justice, and it does explain why there's such hatred from the inefficient and those that favor the welfare state. You're probably quite well aware that I've often been accused of being an extremist. I don't think I am. But if my thoughts and actions do come from the hopeless mess that Whitlam and the clammy hand of socialism have caused in this country, I'm jolly happy to occupy a position in the political spectrum as far away from that miserable philosophy as possible. I totally reject the irrationality of the middle-of-the-road position occupied by so many of our confused leaders in business, in the media, in seats of learning, and more importantly, by so many of our Liberal Country Party politicians, both at state and federal level. The only true alternative to socialism is indeed free enterprise and capitalism. The middle of the road is not an alternative. Can the Liberal Party save us? Can we expect any better from the many watered-down socialists in the opposition parties, both at state and federal levels? At this point of time, I personally do not think that Australia will fare any better under Malcolm Fraser when the Liberal government is returned to power, unless he is returned with a huge majority. It will only be in these circumstances that he'll be able to tell his middle-of-the-road socialist colleagues to get lost. Australia is going back to the free market and the free enterprise system, a step which is incidentally being taken by increasing numbers of countries in the world, including many in the communist bloc, and they're finding that it's necessary to go back to the free market to revitalize their ailing, centrally planned economies. Bear in mind that the eight main points of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto are all part and parcel of liberal country party platforms and policies. I'll read them to you. Expropriation of land and property and the use of rent from land to cover state expenditure, exemplified by death and succession duties, land taxes, ownership of land by the State Housing Commission and Crown leased land. 2. A high and progressively graded income tax. 3. The abolition of the right of inheritance for death duties, taxes on gifts. Centralization of credit by the establishment of a state bank. Nationalization of transport, the TA, the railways, and the Australian National Shipping Line. An increase in the state ownership of factories and the redistribution of land. The duty of all to work. State education for all children and the abolition of factory work for children. The Liberal Country Party politicians practiced the Communist Manifesto while professing free enterprise. Bear also in mind that it is Australian political history that the Liberal Country Party politicians have never yet reversed one major piece of socialist legislation, nor have they ever closed down one ruddy more government department foisted on the nation by the Labour Party. They've always kept these departments and expanded them. There are signs that in the Liberal Party, like the AMA, especially in the Curtin division at Dick Garland's electorate, that the Liberals are beginning to waken up, but they've got a lot of waking up to do and a lot of learning to do and a lot of free enterprise practicing to accomplish. What must the Liberal Country Party politicians learn? More importantly, what must they ask themselves if they represent free enterprise? 1. Do they wish to recognize individual rights? More importantly, do they agree that the individual owns his own body, his mind, his work, and its products? Or should he be owned by the state, or society, or some other collective organization? 2. Do they support a system of living which bans physical force from human relationships, including, of course, the force of government? This, of course, if accepted by our free enterprise professing Liberal Country Party politicians, accepts voluntary human relationships in all its ramifications, with the rights to agree, more importantly, the rights to disagree. The institution of private property is essential if individual rights are recognized, and is the factor that leads to a creative mind, which of course is man's most important attribute. It is this recognition of the rights to private property which protects the rights of individuals to disagree one with another. The Workers' Party, of course, implicitly honors individual rights, including individual property rights. And this basic moral philosophy totally rejects the whole ruddy Communist Manifesto. Every trace of it must similarly be removed as quickly as possible from the Liberal Country Party platform, and no compromise with this stand can possibly be tolerated. Our battle will not finish there. It will not finish until the last trace of this socialist disease is wiped from the face of Australia, and that is yours and my task. It is absolutely essential that each Australian is given the message that he or she is more important than the state, be it at local government, state government, or federal government level. Everyone amongst us has been taken for a colossal ride by benevolent government, the lower socioeconomic groups, the stupid Labour supporters, more than the stupid Liberal Country Party politicians supporters. Governments of all political shades can best help the lower socio-economic groups by completely dismantling all the crippling taxes which hurt the poor more than the less poor. Taxes which, of course, are robbed to provide government services. Taxation is theft and robbery. Can anyone define it in any other way? Probate is a monstrous thing. Big government is bad government. Almost every government department is unnecessary. And the few that are necessary are grossly overstaffed, grossly inefficient, grossly expensive, and we've far better turned over gradually to free enterprise. In this regard, we must single out education, welfare, including health in all its aspects, and of course the departments of minerals and energy. These should be immediately closed down both at state and federal level. And free enterprise should take over their activities. Lang Hancock has and could do more for Western Australia than the whole state government, including Sir Charles Court. Indeed, I think he's a far greater asset to Australia than the whole federal government and all the pampered civil servants or paper doodlers, as the Danish Progress Party leader Glistrup prefers to call them. Free enterprise has never really existed because of government interference in the free market. It is government interference that makes monopolies possible. If government both at state and federal level, Labour or Liberal, it matters not, would only get out of the way of free enterprise permanently, this country, Western Australia included, and all the deceived electors would benefit immensely. If the general public, you the general public, could only taste the joy, prosperity, freedom, and efficiency of a true free enterprise society without government interference and the crippling taxation to pay for that interference, politicians and the vast parasitic bureaucracies would never again be able to fasten themselves onto the population. Nor would the interfering union, which have kept the lower socioeconomic groups disadvantaged, have a look in. Laissez-faire capitalism or free enterprise would, of course, favour those that work, not the paper doodlers, nor the bludgers. Taxes are robbed from the workers to provide for the pampered lives of both groups. Free enterprise is the only just and certain system which will uplift the miserable lives of the lower socioeconomic groups. Cost of living would be markedly reduced, and labour, of course, would be much cheaper and more freely available. The minimum wage should be abolished, and also the prevention of child labour, as many children would be far happier either not attending school at all or leaving school at a very early age and going to the factories or other industries on the apprenticeship system. Welfare and unemployment benefit for those too lazy or too stupid to work should be abolished. Dean Hazelwood understands the problem of the socialist disease. He's been about the only churchman to speak one word of common sense in the last 3 years. Kalgoorlie will have a tremendous future under a free market system, as gold will become an increasingly valuable commodity. Also, the vast amount of untapped and tapped mineral wealth. When speaking of the future of Kalgoorlie, I do not specifically refer to the red light area. But as you, of course, all know, the Workers' Party does not believe that prostitution has got anything to do with government. A patient of mine recently told me that she works as a call girl, doing about 3 jobs per week in sundry Perth hotels. I asked her what she charged, and she said $50 a time. Stupidly, I asked her, "Do you pay tax?" Oh, she said, "Don't be silly, doctor." "Well," I said, "if you don't seem to work very hard, why don't you claim unemployment benefits?" Oh, she said, "That would be dishonest." This story, of course, illustrates the honesty that is necessary to make a free enterprise society work. Personally, I prefer to have all income tax abolished rather than sales tax as an initial step. But it doesn't really matter. They've both got to go to come down eventually, and the Workers' Party is off to drop sales tax immediately. Just, it goes. The reduced money required to maintain the greatly reduced government service and the public servants would come from one or the other. However, Western Australia is in a magnificent position with its mineral wealth and its agricultural wealth to have very little taxation at all, including the thing that annoys a lot of people, rates and taxes, which are another form of taxation. If the mineral wealth was liberated from the stifling obstructions of the Court Mansaras Axis, Western Australia would prosper beyond your wildest dreams. In the agricultural field with the starving world around us, we are again in a magnificent position. But the Department of Agriculture should be immediately closed down with all the sundry boards, tomato boards, potato boards, egg boards, what have you, can go on for ages. The farmer in turn must gradually learn not to look for subsidies and tariff protection from any sort. For with greatly reduced taxation and no probate to worry about, he wouldn't need to look for subsidies. Now, what can we do to either make the Liberal Party practice the free enterprise principles they think of value? More so, what can we do to stop the vast mass of voters thinking that government knows best? In the early days, it is hardly likely that we'll get any help from the certifiable intellectuals in the media and elsewhere whose most important job is to justify the existence of government. Intellectuals will be found quite widespread in the bureaucracies and in the universities. But I think they will respond, as they've done in America, to the greatest movement based on morality that this country has ever experienced. Initially, we must rely on education and self-education of our members, our intended members, our friends, our business associates, and our colleagues. It's highly essential that the women folk, the stronger sex, are involved in the dissemination of knowledge, as generally they're more fond of talking and have a little bit more time. But it's highly essential that women or men who are a little bit self-conscious should take public speaking courses and involve themselves in debating society and in selling things, in salesmanship. It's not a difficult philosophy to sell, but it will take a certain amount of time. And I think you must endeavor at every opportunity to speak about the sundry benefits of the individualist against the collective philosophy. Everyone in Kalgoorlie should be informed. You all have friends and relatives elsewhere in Australia and Western Australia. To tell them about the Workers' Party and ask them to make contact with our organization. We need far more people willing to attack the nonsense turning up in the newspapers from socialist labor sources and socialist liberal sources. Those writing letters, of course, must fully educate themselves in the principles of the free enterprise system, because above all, it is truth that our adversaries fear. We must find people willing to infiltrate government bodies, Sunday commissions, etc., until we've got time to dismantle them. Whatever happens, this movement will win. Please help us to win a little bit more quickly. I do hope the people of Kalgoorlie will come to the public rally in the Sheraton Hotel on Saturday the 23rd of August between 8 and 10. When, amongst other visitors, we're expecting the distinguished publisher, Maxwell Newton. I hope I can envisage fleets of buses coming from other country areas as well, and converging in Perth, because you will not only make the people of Western Australia sit up, you'll make the people of Canberra sit up. I'll be quite happy to answer any questions. One of the problems with the questions about the Workers' Party is that people tend to drift away into all sorts of little things which are really quite irrelevant and forget that the main gist of this is a movement for limited government, no government, limited government, and much less taxation and much less interference in your life and my life.